Hello, good afternoon. I'm Janice Simon with the Illinois Public Health Institute, and I'm here today to talk a little bit about building support for the Healthy Eating Active Living Act in Illinois. There's a whole bunch I could cover. I have about 15 minutes, so I've chosen some of, I think, some of the key lessons learned so far that any of you interested in working on reducing sugary drink access would be interested in knowing. So this is the required slide, no relationships. So really today I want to go over a little bit of the data around why so many people are starting to focus on sugary drinks. I think it's become a really hot topic, and go over some of the science behind it, but also really talk about the challenges and opportunities around advocating for investment in prevention using an excise tax on sugary drinks as a mechanism to do that. And also we've learned a lot. We've been doing this sort of proactive agenda for at least a couple of years in Illinois, and we've had some lessons learned around messaging, communications, and organizing strategies. And so I'll talk a little bit about that. So where does this come from? So the Illinois Public Health Institute helps to coordinate the Illinois Alliance to Prevent Obesity, and we were started in 2010 to begin to align strategies in Illinois for obesity prevention through a policy lens, policy systems and environmental change lens. And the long-term goal of increasing consumption of healthy foods and beverages in comparison to unhealthy food and beverages has been on our roadmap from the beginning. We've also had some goals about educating and advocating for reduced sugary drink consumption because of all the growing science behind just how bad they are for you, for your health. And the other goal was to pass this penny per ounce excise tax to make sure that the revenues raised could be invested in other obesity prevention initiatives that we know work. So this has been on our agenda for a while. And let me say we are not alone. There are, have been, I think, 32 attempts across the United States to pass a sugary drink tax to invest in prevention. The country of Mexico successfully passed a excise tax in 2014. And Berkeley, California also recently passed by voter referendum a sugary drink tax in their area. So, you know, how do we do this? So starting to build awareness, the health harms of sugary drinks. How many of you know, have heard, soda's not good for you? Most people know that, right? How many of you think you could really clearly define what a sugary drink is? A few. So there's definitely a lot of marketing going on, and I think for the most part, people may know soda's not that great, but they're not quite sure what else is a sugary drink or why it's bad for you. So we really had to start with building awareness. So. And early 2014, we launched our Rethink Your Drink campaign. And this is really to get towards that goal of educating and informing and raising awareness. But there was definitely strategy in this as being the precursor to how to build support for a legislative campaign. So in February 24, Governor Quinn at the time declared that month Rethink Your Drink Month in Illinois, and we used it to really launch a kickoff public awareness education campaign, really focusing on the health harms of sugary drinks. We trained community speakers. We host lots of community events, and you know we have partners all over the state conducting this, including in Carbondale, all the way up to Rockford, Chicago, East St. Louis. We have people taking materials and really launching this campaign. And we also utilized it to get some media engagement to try to start raising awareness. This particular photo here was a WBEZ article. There was a school that had held an event. They went out there and they talked to the students about what it was like to drink fruit-infused water instead of sugary drinks, and most of the students are like, it was pretty good, I never had that before, and I would choose it over something else. So this is just the beginning for us in raising awareness. We developed a whole lot of materials, and I'll talk a little bit later about how we were able to do that with some funding, but we have posters, educational brochures, we have these fancy Rethink Your Drink water bottles that actually show how much sugar you'd be drinking if you drank one of those beverages every day for a week. So it's an astounding amount of sugar. If, for example, even just one sports drink every day for a week, you're drinking almost like 2 cups worth of sugar. And so when people start to see how much sugar is in these drinks, they get shocked, and it's part of our campaign. And since then, we've had over 160 organizations specifically request our materials, and we've mailed them to them. Over 1,000 water bottles have been distributed, 1,500 posters have been sent out, and more than that for brochures. And again, people are using this all over the state, and I think we're making a difference. We were able to add to the state behavioral risk surveillance survey questions about sugary drink consumption and water consumption in 2014, and we just got that data, and we're hoping to have it again in a couple years so we can see if there's any changes based on the education campaign. And now our coalition is really seen as the go-to resource for these materials. So I didn't bring samples with me today. That's our brochure there. And important from a strategy point of view, the importance of doing this campaign was it was a way for every coalition member, no matter if they were into policy or into legislative, they could all participate in this campaign. It was something everyone could do, no matter if you had limits on lobbying capacity, if you even supported a tax on sugary drinks, this was something you could do, and it really helped rally our coalition together around this issue, and I think that was important. So some key facts that we've used that have really helped people understand the issue. So some people don't know that sugary drinks are the number one source of added sugar in our diet. So when you take all the drinks together, they represent about 51% of the added sugars people are consuming in the American diet. Just one sugary drink a day increases the risk of developing type 2 diabetes by 26%. And sugary drinks are actually linked to several diseases independent of weight. So whether or not you're overweight or obese, the sugary drink consumption, even just one a day, is increasing your risk for a whole variety of diseases, including diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, and a few others. And actually, a lot of science is coming out that shows your body is actually metabolizing and responding to sugar you drink differently than the sugar you eat. So there's been some dietitians coming, and particularly Kimberly Stanhope out of UC Davis is doing a lot of work on the liver and the way it functions around the sugar you drink. And so it doesn't really trigger your satiation cues in the same way that eating sugar would. So we kind of compare it to if you drink a sugary drink, you don't really feel full and you go on with your day and you perhaps eat a cookie or a hamburger in addition to it. Whereas if you just ate the cookie or hamburger, you feel full and you may or may not need to go consume additional things. So it's a satiation issue. And there's also issues with fructose and the way it's metabolized by your liver, whereas other types of sugars are metabolized by your whole body. So there's a whole slew of science behind all that. I could talk a lot more. But the science is starting to really show that sugary drinks in particular and the way you drink sugar is affecting your body differently than the way you eat sugar. And in Illinois, we know that obesity and related diseases cost us over $6 billion a year in healthcare costs, with about $1 billion of that being to the Medicaid program. So this is a public finance issue as well to try to address and reduce obesity. This is just one of the slides that we show sometimes in community presentations to help people understand. So the American Heart Association warns to limit your daily sugar intake to 6 teaspoons of added sugar for women and no more than 9 teaspoons a day for men. And if you look at some of the common drinks, even something like vitamin water, which people think, oh, it's water, it's fine, almost, it exceeds the limits for women and almost meets the limits for men. And of course, with the sugary, the soda pop and whatnot, it far exceeds daily limits. So that's just one a day, you're exceeding your limit. And for some people, you're drinking more than one a day for multiple meals a day, plus then you're eating other drinks, and bread even has sugar. So when you add up all your added sugars, you're getting a lot. So we've done awareness, and that was sort of one aspect, and it really helped build some coalition and build some public awareness for why we're addressing sugary drinks. But what about our bill? So let me just give you some basics of the bill, and then I'll talk about process and some lessons learned. So our bill, it's a penny per ounce excise tax. So for a 12-ounce can of soda, that would be an added 12 cents, so penny per ounce. For any sugary drink that has 5 grams of sugar per 12 ounces or more. So when you look at the American Heart Association definitions of sugary drinks, the high sugary drinks are defined as 5 grams of sugar for 12 ounces. So we stuck with the sort of a nationally recognized definition. And this is a tax paid by the distributors of sugary drinks. So it's not by the retailers, it's not by the consumers, it's the industry paying it on the distribution chain as it goes out to the community. Now, the idea is that likely they're going to pass that price increase along, right? So the community will see the price increase, and it's through Berkeley and Mexico, we're starting to see that they're passing some of it along, but they're not passing the whole thing along. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in places where they've passed it. And it's for all bottled sugary drinks, syrups, and powders. So if you, for example, intend to make fountain drinks, you can take the syrup, whatever you would, and you would tax it a penny per ounce as well. It's estimated to raise about $600 million a year in Illinois, which means we're drinking a lot of sugary drinks. And that is to establish a wellness fund. So this wellness fund, we're putting about $100 million of it into the wellness fund, which, if you put it a little bit into perspective, I believe the We Choose Health grant across the state was about $5 million over a few years, and this would be $100 million. So we're really amplifying the grant, making opportunities for public health in the state. And the other $500 million of it goes to Medicaid. Medicaid is constantly under cuts and threats, and it's really important to fund Medicaid, and particularly the Provider Relief Fund is always an appropriation that's hard to get in the state, and so we're putting it there. And let me just say that this breakdown of how this goal has changed over the last couple of years, we've really tried to reach out to communities and legislators and listen to what's needed. And something that always comes up is regressivity. And people are saying, well, you can't just tax sugary drinks because it impacts, it's a higher proportion of income for low-income residents more. And so a couple of ways, economists have predicted that while the tax itself is regressive, the health impact of that tax is progressive. So because lower income residents are more price sensitive, that potential health impacts are actually progressive. So that's from an economic lens something that said, but we said it's not just about the tax for us. This is not about the tax. This is about preventing obesity and chronic disease in communities and getting communities the resources they need to do all the other things that we know also work. So creating more baby-friendly programs, creating more farmers market double value coupon programs for SNAP recipients, creating more bike lanes and walking trails, doing more physical education and nutrition education in schools. This is about getting communities the resources they need to live healthier lives. And so we put it right back. And this wellness fund, in the way the HEAL Act is written, designates at least 50% of that money goes to high-need communities. So it can't just be the people good at writing grants get the money. It has to be designated and go towards low-income communities. 20% of the funds go directly to local health departments because of the coordinating role they're often playing across the state in doing obesity prevention initiatives. And there's also a little bit of funds for evaluation and technical assistance to make sure this is being done correctly and is having an impact. So where did we start? In 2013, we started to introduce legislators to our coalition as a whole and all of our issues, and we brought up the HEAL Act as one option, and we were actually able to start to identify some legislative champions through that, and we ended up finding our two chief sponsors, so Senator Maddie Hunter in the Senate and Representative Robin Gable in the House. That was just the start. In 2014, we introduced the bill really with the intent of just starting a discussion. We knew we had some work to do. It wasn't going to pass right away. We had a subject matter only hearing in the Senate. And at the end of that session, interestingly, our Speaker of the House brought it up for a vote in committee at the last minute from a sort of political something. I don't know. He just brought it out of nowhere. And it was voted down. So the head of that committee is friends with the Pepsi distributor in his district, and he just brought it up for a vote and kicked it right back down to make a point to us that we were not going anywhere anytime soon. So it was fine, and we didn't really have, we just wanted to start a discussion. We're a public health coalition. We didn't really know what we were about to be hit with, and the industry came out in force. So, of course, you can imagine the beverage industry is against this. They don't want a price increase and have to pay on the distribution line for a tax. And they completely outdid us in the media and started all sorts of interesting tactics that I can go on about later. But it started the conversation. And I think, more importantly, within the legislature, it started conversations in communities. I know there were several groups who were like, oh, what is this? And I'm not so sure about it. And it took a long time to have conversations with community members and board members and really think through what are the benefits and costs to this type of solution. And we were able to do a lot of coalition building. So the summer and fall of 2014, we really did our message research. We did a lot of grassroots organizing. We gave communities time to talk about this and to think about it. And we've really built a bigger, much bigger coalition, a stronger coalition with a lot of diverse voices represented. So, people representing African American communities and Latino communities and Asian Health Coalition and the sort of traditional public health communities, but also sort of local food systems and education systems and all the groups who could benefit from the wellness fund. We really tried to build up support for this, in addition to visiting legislators and trying to clear up some of the misinformation the industry had given them the year before. And then in 2015, we reintroduced the bill. And as for those of you in Illinois know, we are not done with the 2015 legislative session. And there was a report released towards the end of May from Voices for Illinois Children that listed all the different ways the state could raise revenue, and the sugary drink tax and the HEAL Act specifically was listed as one of those options. So we know it was something that was circulated to legislators, and we are officially still on the table. And even more interestingly, we are also on the table on both the legislative side and with the governor's administration. So this is something that we are continuing to work on. And at this point, our strategy is not a standalone bill, but if it is going to be included, it's included as a broader budget package, making sure that Medicaid gets funded and we're not getting rid of some of the services of Medicaid and making sure we're investing in long-term prevention. So I think I'm probably running short on time. I'm going to go through a little bit of our lessons learned. So in message testing, We really learned a lot from some focus groups and public opinion polls. Most people knew that sugary drinks were harmful, but they didn't always know exactly what a sugary drink was. We found it was really important to focus on heart disease and diabetes, not on obesity. Obesity is a personal issue, the public felt. Obesity is something you have control over. But for some reason, diabetes and heart disease was something the public should address. And so we really found that switching and talking about the long-term disease impact was sort of more effective with the public than talking about obesity prevention. Also, referring to it as a Healthy Eating Active Living Act and not a tax. Clearly, people are adverse to the word tax. So that has been helpful as far as building support. A lot of people asking, what's in it for me? So really drawing from a public communications point of view, drawing the link between what might happen in someone's local personal, you know, geographic area and the tax is really important to them. And words like opportunity, choice, children, communities, and tools were all really important as well. So we talk about building more opportunities for healthy living and things like that. Not as effective arguments with lots of numbers and statistics. People just don't like that. They also don't like you referring to lawmakers or legislation, so they really don't trust our lawmakers. And so if you talk about the health experts and the health advocates saying one thing rather than the legislators proposing something, it makes a big difference. We did a poll in spring of 2015, and we actually found that two-thirds of Illinoisans support, and we actually worded it as a tax. We didn't try to hide the fact that this was a tax. We said, do you support a sugary drink tax that would raise money for Medicaid and prevention in your community? And we got two-thirds support, a majority support. And even in some of the more conservative areas of the state, we still had a majority support, over 50%. And, of course, strong support for investment in health initiatives, strong support for Medicaid and preventing Medicaid cuts. And we were able to leverage this public opinion poll to get a lot of media coverage, and obviously it's important to legislators to see what's going on in their district. And I will just say a lot of our communications and polling and things is thanks to a Voices for Healthy Kids grant, so that has been very helpful. The Voices for Healthy Kids initiative has really been investing in a lot of policy levers that improve obesity prevention, and this was one of them. Some coalition strategies that have been helpful, you know, if you're trying to engage folks, we're all limited in time, we're all limited in capacity. Having things that are easy to copy and paste, so template letters to the editor, template newsletters for coalition members, fact sheets, creating all the collateral materials that are just easy to copy and paste into a virtual newsletter or hand out to your community and have discussions on, were all really helpful. So we did a lot of the backbone work about creating materials that the coalition could use within the community. And you have to do the coalition building work up front. You can't leave voices out of this discussion. This discussion affects a lot of people, and we've been doing our best to try to reach out to communities all across the state. And I know recently with the Chicago proposal by Alderman Cardenas, it complicated some things, and I think there's a lot of further discussion that needs to be had, especially in the city of Chicago. Polling matters, relationship matters, both from a lobbying and a grassroots level. And ultimately, like, the most useful strategy is keeping us focused on health. This is about improving health, and that has we have found really helpful. A few of the industry tactics, they, of course, will say a tax won't work, and they point to a very small tax in Arkansas and West Virginia that never had the purpose of working like this. And they say those states have high rates of obesity, so it doesn't work. They say we'll lose jobs. A lot of economists, though, argue that the money is not lost in the economy. You actually, instead of drinking regular Pepsi, you might drink Diet Pepsi, or you might drink Dasani water, which are all created by the same company, right? So the jobs are just, the products are switching, but the jobs are not being lost. A lot of this sort of nanny state, keep the government out of your grocery cart. This ad here is actually something they took out when the Speaker of the House brought it up for a vote at the end of last year. So you can see the grocery cart reference saying, keep the government out of your grocery cart. And they took the ad out for that day in the Springfield newspaper so that, you know, to remind legislators to vote no. They do a lot of advertising, and they help to spread misinformation very quickly. They have highly paid lobbyists. I think they have all the highest paid lobbyists in the state grappled up right now. It's hard to find lobbyists who don't have a conflict of interest. And they also are very good about doing district-specific information. So they have they actually pulled together a coalition of people who buy sugary beverages in a district, and they said, this is our coalition. Oh, and we're against the tax, and they tried to conflate the fact that people who buy sugary drinks would also be against the tax. The unfortunate thing is some of our partners were on that list, and when they realized they had been put on the list without being asked, they got very upset and called the industry and said, we're not part of this coalition, you need to take us off. A few challenges. So I talked about regressivity, but you know, we know that the health disproportionate impact of heart disease and diabetes are really unfair to communities, and we need to give communities the opportunities and resources they need to really improve that infrastructure for health. So that's where this wellness fund goes to. Lots of confusion about how the tax works, so we've found that constituent face-to-face meetings really help. Bringing physicians and dietitians with us to meetings with legislators has been especially helpful because legislators are really interested in some of the science behind sugary drinks, and bringing people who really understand and can speak to the metabolism and the impact on your body has really been helpful for legislators. And also, not all of our coalition partners are allowed to lobby for whatever reason, and so finding ways to incorporate everyone in a way that they can participate in this campaign, whether it's the Rethink Your Drink campaign or the HEAL Act campaign, finding ways that everyone can participate has been helpful. And of course, our funding is on and off, and the industry can outspend us any day. I know in Berkeley, right before they passed their measure, the industry had literally bought up every single piece of advertising space in the entire city. Every single one. You couldn't walk that city without stepping over their advertisement. So they will sort of fund this to the extreme. So where we are today, we went from an early list of about 12 organizations supporting this. We now have over 60 statewide and local organizations supporting this. We were able to, on a day of action, generate over 2,000 emails to legislators, with at least one email to each legislator across the state. So our list of individuals and grassroots interested in this has grown. We have secured a whole bunch of earned media, from a really great Chicago Tribune article talking about the need for investment in prevention, to you know, op-eds in the Chicago Sun-Times and State Journal Register, which is our state capital paper on the governor's inauguration day. And overall, we've had over 60 media hits, and our PR firm estimates we've hit over 500,000 views with these hits over the last 2 years. We are in a current budget impasse, if you haven't heard already, for those of you. And we have to advocate, though, that the money stays for health. So that's our biggest concern right now, is in a budget impasse, when you need revenue, we're really concerned about them just taking the revenue to pay bills. And this has to be about health. It has to be about community. It has to be about investing in prevention. And I think that's our hardest fight ahead right now. But we know as of late August, over 50 legislators have agreed to vote for this as part of a budget package. So keep your eye on Illinois. And that's all I have.